The piece of music that you are listening is a production of one of our local talents. He's Farbod Sadeh, a 13-year-old Iranian who lives in Portland, Oregon. And the piece is called A Page of My Life. The music was by Dr. Dariush Dolatshahi, and it's from Farbod Sadeh, as I mentioned. Going back to our interview, you're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM. This is Voices of the Middle East, and I'm Gudarz Ektedari. I'm talking to Professor William Beeman, and we are talking about the issue of regime change in Iran and forces behind it. I think you mentioned the name of Haider Aliyev, the president of Azerbaijan. Dr. Beeman, could you talk a little bit about the ethnical, possibility, ethnical movement, and the problem that may arise in Iran? And I know that just recently a gentleman by the name of Dr. Chehreghani, who is heading an Azeri, I don't know if you should call it separatist movement or independence movement or autonomous movement. I haven't heard him directly, so I don't know exactly what extent he's advocating. But he had met with some Pentagon officials in Baku, Azerbaijan, and he was in Washington, D.C. a month ago and also met with some of these people that we are talking about. What extent do you think this these issues are happening?
Well, I think they're related because it seems very clear to me that there are people within the administration in Washington that are looking for a way to bring about regime change in Iran, and they're looking for indigenous Iranian groups that might be strong enough or that they might be able to support in such a way that it would bring about the overthrow of this particular government. It's curious because it seems that just parenthetically, it seems that people in Washington don't really understand that Iran has a constitution. It's very curious. They think that somehow I think that their view is that somehow Ayatollah Khamenei is a kind of a Saddam-like dictator who just sort of sits in Tehran and exercises authoritarian rule. But it is very curious. But nevertheless, certainly the groups inside Iran who might support, for instance, the restoration of the monarchy, and they believe that there are such groups and that they might be able to encourage. Or a group like the Azerbaijan, the Southern Azerbaijan separatist movement that Mr. Chehreghani is claiming to be head of, are possible ways that the government in Tehran could be threatened and perhaps overthrown. So they're looking in a way for clients, and I will tell you that my personal opinion is that the Iranian population is going to be very wary of any group that receives excessive support from the United States. I think that memories are very long, and people remember the events of 1953 when Mohammad Mossadegh was overthrown by forces that were backed by the American CIA, and the Shah was restored to the throne. So there'll be great suspicion of any groups that receive a lot of support from Washington on the principle that somehow the United States is trying to establish a puppet regime or a regime that would be controlled by the United States in the future.
But in reality, there is a resistant movement inside Iran, and the portion of it that is attached to the system, to the government, is called reform movement. And then there are nationalists and other liberal groups and a very strong student movement that actually in the past few days they had some demonstrations in Tehran and they're calling for changes in the constitution, or basically demanding more liberal rights and rights for women and freedom of speech and so on. Can you talk a little bit about what are the balance of forces inside the country and how these reform movements are operating?
You're absolutely correct. And I expect that especially the student movement and the youth movement is going to increase in strength as time goes on. As I mentioned to you before, 75% of the population in Iran is under the age of 25. These are people who never knew the Iranian Revolution. They never knew Ayatollah Khomeini. They're not very well versed in the sort of esoteric theology that underlay the Iranian Revolution, and they're very aware of the rest of the world. Iran has one of the highest proportions of people who have access to the internet and to international media of any country in the Middle East, and so young people in Iran in particular are extremely aware of the world outside. They know what democratic institutions look like in other nations. Many of them have traveled abroad, and the push for reform within Iran is going to increase as time goes on. And also, we should mention that most of the religious leaders that underlie the government are really quite elderly. Although they seem to live a long time, they're not going to live forever. And so we're seeing a whole generation of individuals who will eventually pass from the scene, leaving the political life of the country in the hands of much younger people. So I do expect that the student protests, the student movements are going to have an effect over time, for no other reason than through attrition. Ayatollah Khamenei doesn't seem to be a successor for him. Nobody wants to step up and espouse his particular theological position, which was opposed actually by most of the grand ayatollahs at the time that Khomeini first promulgated that idea, namely the idea of rule by the clerics in the absence of the Mahdi, in the absence of the hidden imam. Mm-hmm.
I just want to remind the listeners that you're listening to KBOO, and our phone lines are open. If you have any question for Dr. Beeman, please call 503-231-8187. Again, it's 503-231-8187. Dr. Beeman, I want to ask you one thing. How did you get involved with Iranian politics?
Well, I've been a long-time student of Iran. I was actually in Iran before the revolution, and I have obviously written many articles about Iran and have conducted quite a lot of research on Iranian culture and society. And so I think that in particular, Iranian politics is inseparable from other aspects of Iranian life. And so there is no way for us to talk about Iran without talking about these political events. And since 1978-1979, the Iranian Revolution and the way that it has played out in social life has been the one great thing that I think we all have had to deal with in the Iranian studies field.
Thank you. We have, I believe, a caller. Caller, you're on the air.
Yes, hello.
Yeah, welcome.
I have a question which is simple, because I think that the American public has very small, little memories of Iran, and what little they have is not very much in depth or very long term. But the one thing they do remember is the hostage crisis. 444 days was the number, mm-hmm. And I memorize it, and I'm sure millions of other Americans. Now, is there anything that these younger progressives supposedly within Iran can do to try to publicly state some sort of sympathy for that action in and of itself, forgetting all of the bad history that might have predated and were the reasons for that, in an effort to try to mark a new time of kind of rapprochement or some sort of healing of the wound to get beyond that last injury.
Yeah, I know that the American public seems to have the idea, and I certainly our government has the idea that the United States was the injured party in the Iranian Revolution, and that that the hostage crisis was the ultimate insult to the United States. I think that the hostage crisis would have healed a lot sooner had the United States afterwards not continued to show hostility toward Iran. If you remember, the United States backed Iraq in the Iran-Iraq War, and we provided chemical and biological weapons to Iraq during the Iran-Iraq War. Many Iranians who were injured in the war believed that the United States was responsible. There were several incidents where there was an incident during the war where the United States, during the Gulf War, where the United States accidentally shot down an Iranian airliner and never apologized for it, specifically never apologized. Then there's the economic embargo and also the way that Iranians are treated when they try to come to the United States or get visas. So the Iranians are finding it very, very hard to apologize for the hostage crisis, many of the Iranians, of course, had nothing to do with it anymore because they're so young. But they do remember some of these more recent things that were carried out by the United States against Iran. And again, there's going to need to be quite a lot of dialogue and soul searching on both sides, I think, before all of the injuries and supposed insults that people have suffered are really resolved and healed.
Well, I'd like to follow up then. Is there any discussions between American organizations and Iranian organizations, NGOs or whatever, that are trying to establish some sort of dialogue community to community, if not government to government? And then the second thing is, as I understand what you were saying about the recent history, but in the minds of many Americans, I believe 40% of Americans think that we found weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. And obviously they're misinformed. But if that's the case, then the Americans are basically spoon-fed a very brief version of history that seems to be self-serving. But in that light, they're basically good people that don't know much. So if something's going to happen, I think, in my opinion, the Iranians or some portion of that, whether it's civil society or whatever, should, in effort to try to at least establish a dialogue around the one thing that's burned in the mind of the average American, which is the hostage crisis, and through that breakthrough, then can establish the dialogue about all the other injuries of both parties. But I see that the Bush administration will probably continue to capitalize on the last injury, and there will be no diplomacy, and there'll be nothing but threats and perhaps even eventually conflict.
Yeah, I think you're correct. By the way, I'm writing a book. I'm completing it this summer called Double Demons, Cultural Impediments to Iranian-American Understanding, in which I deal pretty extensively with these issues. In fact, both Iran and the United States have demonized each other, and this is one of the reasons why we can't reach this understanding. But again, you have to understand that whereas the United States might fixate on the hostage crisis, Iranians who are upset with the United States fixate on earlier events. They consider the whole regime of the Shah to have been something that was established by the United States in order to exploit the Iranian people, and they go back to 1953 with that. So, as I say, there's plenty of I'm not saying that justifies the hostage crisis, but a better explanation for the hostage crisis for the American public probably needs to come out, and that is that it was an accident. it wasn't intended to happen the way that it did. But once it started, it took on a life of its own, and it became impossible for Khomeini and the other political figures in Tehran to back down from it, or they would have lost their own power. So that's certainly one thing that Americans need to understand, is that it was not intended to happen the way that it did.
Before we go to the next caller, I just want to add regarding this dialogue between people. At the same time, or maybe shortly after, the paper of Clash of Civilization came out by Huntington, Iranian President Khatami suggested a dialogue of civilization, and United Nations took that initiative, and they had an office, actually, at UN to facilitate this dialogue. And one of their events that happened in Geneva was a meeting between a lead Iranian student hostage taker and one of the American hostages, that they appeared at a forum and they talked to each other. So actually that student is now for 9 months in prison, Abbas Abdi, who was a spokesperson for a student who took U.S. Embassy hostage. So there are some dialogue, even in this town in Portland, the Iranian community have several organizations that are working and trying hard, and one of those activities is a festival that we have on August 2nd this year, the Saturday, August 2nd at Portland State campus, and as part of that, there would be a forum, and we had another forum last Friday to talk about the issues. But specifically on that forum, maybe we should have a session just talking about the hostage crisis and how we want to pass that point. Now I would like to go to the next caller. And before that, I mentioned the phone number, 503-231-8187. If you have any question, please give us a call. This is KBOO 90.7 FM, and you're listening to Voices of the Middle East. Caller, you're on the air.
Hello, am I on?
Yes, you are.
You just answered a little bit of my question, but I was wondering if you'd be kind enough to elaborate on the actual conditions of what happened with the overthrow of Mossadegh and, you know, how he was elected and what the CIA did and so forth. Because I remember working in a large warehouse when the Iranian hostage crisis thing took place, and nobody had any idea about why it happened. The regular working people I was with were sort of the impression that the Iranians just woke up one day and were in a bad mood and decided to take over the embassy for kicks or something, you know, like they just like to pick on the U.S. And the second thing was, could you go into a little bit about what the Savak was and what the conditions under the Shah were? And thirdly, a little bit, it's my opinion somewhat that we shoot ourselves in the foot historically by our short-sighted policy, which like creates the monsters we have to deal with 20 years later. And of course, this is Monday morning quarterbacking, but who knows? You know, had we not overthrown Mossadegh and tried to work with him, maybe it wouldn't have polarized the society into giving the religious right wing a big banner to carry and a reason to organize. And we sort of, you know, shoot ourselves in the foot and by these stupid mistakes we make that create these monsters that get bigger later on. You know what I mean? And I was just wondering if you could elaborate on those points. Thanks a bunch.
Sure. This is a whole lecture, of course, maybe a whole semester's worth of lectures, but let me see if I can do this very quickly. The United States, and after World War II, was excessively concerned with the Soviet Union. The Soviet Union had already backed a breakaway republic in Iran, the Republic of Azerbaijan, and had been forced to leave that country. The Iranians were concerned with the United States control of oil supplies, among other things, and the British control of oil supplies. And the Mossadegh's rise to power was largely to try to rid Iran of colonial influence, and at that time it was primarily British influence, but the United States was also involved at that time. The Shah of Iran at that time was very young. His father had been forced to abdicate because of his complicity with Germany during World War II. And so he was a very young man, very untried. and he was more or less forced out of the country, and Mossadegh, as prime minister, came to the fore. The United States was worried that the Soviet Union was lurking in the background and was going to take things over. And so we sent in the CIA. Kermit Roosevelt has written about this in an important autobiography. And we organized street demonstrations and other events that caused Mossadegh to withdraw, and the Shah was restored to power. And from that time on, the United States was an economic partner with the Shah. He became one of what we called one of the pillars in what we call the Twin Pillars policy, and that would be Iran and Saudi Arabia, who would then be the surrogates for the United States in the Persian Gulf region to protect the Gulf region from Soviet influence and keep the Soviet Union from getting oil. This continued down till the 1970s. The Shah became a very heavy-handed dictator. He had no responsibility to the population since all of his income came from oil, and was looking very directly toward the United States. Eventually, the development schemes made a number of people very, very wealthy in Iran, but the middle class and the lower classes were more or less left out. And at a certain point, when inflation got huge and real estate prices just went through the roof as a result of these schemes, the population had had enough. And there was always religious opposition from Ayatollah Khomeini, who had been around for many years. And the opposition finally concretized around religious groups and also essentially socialist democratic groups that were interested in overthrowing the Shah. And it came to a head in 1978. That's a brief history.
Yeah, and then I just want to mention that actually my previous show here was an interview with Mark Gazarovsky, who has done an extensive research on the coup, 1953 CIA coup. And that program is online. If you are, if you want to listen to it, you can go to www.voicesofthemiddleeastoneword.com and listen to that 1 hour interview. And in addition to that, there are lots of articles and my website in a section that's called Lessons of History about 1953 coup. And actually, tonight's show also will be online within a couple of days at the same site. It's www.voicesofthemiddleeast.com. And by that, we're getting close to the end of our time tonight. And I want to thank Dr. Beeman for being with us. And hopefully I get the chance and privilege to talk to you again in the future.
I hope so. I do occasionally visit Portland, and I'd love to meet you.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You were listening to KBOO 90.7 FM, and this was Voices of the Middle East, and I'm Gudar Zektadari, your host. We'll listen to a little piece of music, and hope you have a good night and a good weekend, and talk to you in a month.
آفتابم باشی شبیر سقف آسمون رخشند مهتابم باشی دلم میخواد از این قفس شب نیمه شب پر بکشم هر جا که من دل میکنی مثل نسیم سر بکشم دلم میخواد هر جا باشم ما تو فقط تنها باشم دلم میخواد هر جا باشم ما تو فقط تنها باشم میخواد زندون غم با عشق ما خراب بشه عمر تموم قصه ها ناچی سر از حباب بشه
دلم میخواد از این قفس شب نیمه شب پر بکشم، هر جا که من دل میکنی مثل دل از این سر بکشم، دلم میخواد هر جا باشم با تو فقط من ها باشم، دلم میخواد هر جا باشم با تو فقط من ها باشم. هر جا که من دل میکنی مثل نسیم سر بکشم،